measure of any society is how it treats its women and girls. The smart, powerful, creative, accomplished young women.
We can fight.
I'm here because of you. I'm here because girls like you inspire me.
Good morning, this is Amina with the Surly Voices. I'm in the studio with Donna, with Liz joining us shortly remotely. Donna, good morning. How are you?
You know, I'm here. Good morning, everyone.
I'm as present as can be. I have been out the last 2 weeks, so I'm happy to be here returning. It's been exhausting. I've been trying to avoid the news. So I know we have a special guest today, so I wanted to give a little bit of an overview for that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's your guest.
I didn't know if you had it. Okay, so we're going to hear from the father of Dominic DJ Broaddus, who also carries the same name. So for clarity, we're going to call DJ the decedent son by DJ. And the father, for the purposes of this interview, is Dominic. Okay, so the situation happened in February of 2018, where two young men, they were acquaintances, and as far as the evidence shows us, they also had a relationship of a romantic nature. And so after a phone call, and there were hundreds of phone calls by the evidence, they agreed to a visit at the home of Mr. Frazier, who also had a nursery, a business on the same property. So he goes to the property and he has his telephone and some lubricants in hand. He arrives and within minutes of his arrival on the property is shot four times by Brandon Frazier, who then proceeds to tamper with the evidence, take DJ's phone, dispose of it, delete all evidence of their interactions via text and phone calls from his telephone. There was a second person on the scene, but the court records were redacted so that we don't know who that third person was. We assume many people who have looked at the case, legal experts and amateurs, assume that that third person was the father, a retired Baker County sheriff's deputy. Yeah, convenient, yes?
I didn't know that when I was reading up on it.
Yes. And so, yeah, I mean, I read a lot because I've been doing a lot of interviews with the family.
Okay.
Because of this week leading up to his birthday.
Okay.
And the anniversary. So we understand there are a lot of things about this case that Dominic will clarify for us. When he calls in, it blows my mind that Frazier was able to cite stand your ground as his defense when the law clearly states that if you invite someone to your house, and clearly it was an invitation, right? We're pretty clear that
there's a standing invitation. If that's, well, you know, I guess
acquaintances,
a relationship doesn't have to mean that, but
right.
Clearly he was coming,
and they had a relationship. He didn't come to the place with armed, you know, DJ was not armed when he arrived. And probably like many other visits, he was going to see his friend and he did not make it home.
Uh-huh.
He has a young son in his early teens. There is a civil case coming up, which the family hopes will give, open the door for a criminal prosecution if they're successful in the civil case. And so that's what you need to know going into the conversation. We will ask questions for clarity, for your clarity, as we interview Mr. Brodus.
Okay, and I think Liz joined us too. Liz, can you hear me? Let me see.
Hi.
Oh, there we go. Liz, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear
me? Hi, good morning. Yes, Liz is also preparing for her own trial, so that she couldn't be with us today. But, Donna, I was reading that he got 1 year, like sentenced to 1 year in prison, or?
Yes, last year he was sentenced to 1 year in prison for tampering with evidence. There was a triangle on DJ's hand that showed that there was something in his hand. We know that the cell phone, but where the blood didn't.
I mean, I'm saying this wasn't a clue to, like, further, just 1 year?
He said he feared for his life.
Oh.
And
it
so,
was, yeah, it was only for, yeah, the conviction that he got was only for tampering with evidence for, because the cell phone disappeared.
Right.
DJ's cell phone disappeared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Okay. Well, do you want to jump right into it? I think our guest is on the line as well.
Awesome.
Yeah?
Okay, before we go to the guest, Liz, as an attorney, can you tell us anything that jumped out for you? Anything that jumped out for you on this?
On this? Mm-hmm. Well, I missed the first part of your conversation. So I saw that the father of the guy who shot DJ was a police officer on the same police department. He had recently retired, but at least the police department did go out and get, and they recognized early on that there was a conflict. But I still think, you know, that thin blue line, it's like, okay, if this guy had not been the son of a police officer, would they be taking their time so much in bringing any kind of charges against him? And stand your ground. Hello, what? I mean, what's the story on that? How is he being threatened in any kind of way?
Yeah, you know,
those are the things.
Baker County, before we bring on Dominic, here's what you guys need to know about how this case sits. This took place in Baker County, which is in McClenney, Florida. It has a long history of being a racist bastion. As someone who is born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, it's one of the places that we avoided, that I recall. How is it that, and my other question is, how is it self-defense when you literally shoot someone four times?
Four times.
Let's go to our guest. I'm sure he's ready to give us some more information.
All right. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Oh,
good morning. This is Amina and Donna in the studio. Liz is with us virtually. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So can you introduce yourself and start wherever you'd like, including telling us what we got wrong?
Okay. Yes, my name is Dominic Jerome Broadus I. I'm the father of Dominic Jerome Broadus II, DJ. I'm the grandfather of his son, Caden, and I live in Jacksonville, Florida. And I heard most of this, the recap, Donna, that you had given them.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to state on a couple of things. Well, you had most of it right. This is a they knew each other from a meeting online on a website.
Mm-hmm.
Back in June of 2017. Then again at the end of November of 2017, This white guy, Gardner Frazier, who's the son of a retired police officer, re-engaged my son, enticed him, and invited him for a period of over 3 or 4 weeks. They exchanged over 300 emails and phone calls where Gardner was trying to entice him and invite him back over to his house to for another rendezvous.
Mm-hmm.
On the third... Gardner Frazier lived on a nursery called Southern States, which is owned by their family, their ancestry goes back to the Klan back in that time in the 50s and 60s. They were I think his grandfather, great-grandfather might have been the Grand Wizard down there, but it was a Frasier. Anyway, he arrived to this secluded house that only you could know if someone had given you directions on how to get there. Police didn't know how to get there. Within several minutes of getting there, my son was shot four times in the head. The first two were glancing blows that he would have survived. Mm. The second two were execution style to the back of the head while he was laying on the ground. You talked about, so Southern States is owned by his father and his aunts.
So this is a nursery, okay. Correct?
I'm sorry?
It's a nursery.
Yes.
Okay.
Southern States Nursery. Mm-hmm. So the civil cases that we're going for in May is based on monetary for the survivor of my son, Caden Broadus. So, and Southern States is part of that because he was murdered there and Gardner Frazier works there. You mentioned another person. That's something, also the sheriff there, his name is Scotty Roden. That's Gardner Frazier's uncle.
Wow.
Oh.
So that's one of the reasons they turned it over. They realized right away that they probably knew something. They knew something was up. After he executed my son, he disappeared my son's phone. He erased any text messages that had any knowledge that he knew my son.
But you have emails, right?
Emails, text messages, everything. And I was over 200, 300 of them. Then he called his cousin to come over to live down the street. But his cousin didn't want anything to do with it. He called his sister, who was the one that was there. That was that third person.
Well, was it a sister? Okay.
It was his sister. No one's ever really... They've always laughed about it. Even the sheriff called me in one time. Scotty Roden wanted to talk to me and told me I'd be surprised when I find out who was that third person. I don't know how I was supposed to be surprised by that, you know. And if I'm a sister of someone that just shot someone, I would take his phone and hide it. But I don't think they interviewed her enough or deposed her enough. But then he called his dad, who was in Vegas. Then he called 911. After the police arrived, they took his phone, which he had already erased everything. But what's taking this case so long is not only COVID, but he refused to give information to law enforcement so they had to break into his phone, which took 6 to 8 months.
Mm.
Then you had COVID, then you had his lawyer for the felony trial for tampering with evidence because the state decided that my son went over there uninvited and was the aggressor. I don't know how you find it out, but he went over there with $1,000 in his pocket, sexual lube and slides, and he told him he was there before he arrived. He texted him, I'm here. You waiting on me to come in. So he never opened his phone. So this is what's taking us so long. Then when they uncovered all this evidence, this trove of evidence, the state has still refused to file homicide charges. They filed a felony charge of tampering with evidence, of which he was sentenced to a year, but got 9 months in Baker County Jail, which he used to work in as a nurse. And during that 9 months, they made him a trustee of the jail. So now we're trying to go back for the civil trial because we've had to wait this long to gather the evidence and go through this case again. But fortunately for me and my family, the attorney we hired is a former prosecutor for the civil case. And he's able to, with good forensic evidence and investigative evidence, he's able to show that the story that Gar Frazier gave us, even the story he gave us through his attorney, was a lie. And I don't know how you get to say you stand your ground as a defense when you said you didn't know the person through your attorney, and they've got evidence that shows that you knew him. Mm-hmm. But they have, the state has different case precedents that they use depending upon who's on trial.
So I have a couple of questions for you, Dominic. I'm sorry to interrupt. My questions are, how long did it take? It seems like he made a lot of phone calls, a lot of checking in with a lot of people. He took time to erase lots of text messages, to dispose of, to disappear the phone. How long did it take from the, it was minutes before.
21 minutes, I think it was, between the time he killed my son mm-hmm. and the time he called 911.
Wow.
What about the, you said.
I think was.
sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
You said your son was there for just a few minutes before he was shot?
Yes, ma'am.
How was, and forgive me, I may not have the forensic knowledge of this, but how was that figured out how long he was there before the time of death?
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little?
Yeah, but from the time your son got there and texted, I'm here, mm-hmm. you said it was just a few minutes before someone came out and shot him. Is that correct?
Yeah, he knocked on, from what, and I'm getting all this evidence from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement report. Mm-hmm. From my understanding is, well, when he knocked, and this is from Gardner Frazier's attorney through his proffer statement, that he knocked on the door, my son knocked on the door that they say is not usually used. And when Frazier opened the door, he said, "Do you remember me, motherfucker?" Now, and then started hitting him, started a fight. Now he's got $1,000. He's in slides. He's got lubricants on. You know, they've been together once before, at least, maybe more. I'm not sure. Then he says after that fight, they fell off his porch. Then he told my son to leave his property. And as he was escorting him off, he said, "DJ," my son turned around and attacked him again. And he was in fear for his life. He tackled him and then he shot him. He shot him after he tackled him.
So he just happened to have a gun?
He carries a gun all the time. Yeah. Pretty much, because he does. That Southern States Nursery, they have trespassers that come there, and you know his friend says he always carries a gun around.
So but, the information so
did,
that I read,
did he have bruises or anything like that on him?
The detectives that came to the scene said it didn't look like no struggle. No, because he had a little torn shirt. His shirt was torn. They had some bruises on my son's knuckles and on his, so that they might have been a fight. But the ground was wet. Neither one of them had mud or anything on them that the detectives noticed or anything like that. So, you know, exactly what happened, we don't know, but, you know, exactly how it happened, but we do know what happened, but exactly how. I don't believe that story. My son's a real good fighter, and I'm sure he could have held his own, but this guy said he was tackled by DJ, and then he shot him. But forensic shows the first two shots were when he was standing.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were standing.
How close? So, do we know how close he was?
I think within 3 or 4 feet, they said. He didn't have something on powder burns or wasn't close enough, but he had blood splatter. They could tell from the blood splatter that both of them were standing at the time of the first two shots.
Wow. And so how long after the 911 call were you notified?
I wasn't notified until about, this happened probably about 3 in the afternoon. They probably didn't notify me until about 9:30 in the evening.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Two investigators from FDLE came to my door.
So did they ever make anything of the size? Oftentimes in these types of stand your ground cases where there are many factors other than this, there was a fight and someone feared for their life at play, they make a lot of the size of the individuals. So were these two Were your son and Gar Frazier equal in size?
Yeah, they were similar in size. Mm-hmm. Both approximately 5'11". My son was 31. I think he was like 29. Probably both of them about 170, 180 pounds.
Okay.
Both of them.
Okay. And so has the family made any statements since all of this went on? What has been the... coming from that side, from
this
side.
Like I said, this has been a five-year-old deal. Mm-hmm. We've made statements. We've done rallies. We've been through two state attorneys because one recused himself, mm-hmm. stating we didn't think we would trust any decision he came up with, when yet he hadn't made a decision. We went through it. The defendant at the end tried to come at us with a plea agreement, so he was serving time, but he didn't want his nursing license revoked, so he didn't want to be accused of a felony. When the state attorney in Melissa Nelson's office had told us from the beginning, they wouldn't even talk about a plea deal, but at the end they came and approached us with it anyway, mm-hmm. unless the guy came in and made a statement. This guy has never made a statement. He's never had to defend why he had to use deadly force, because he wasn't in fear of his life. You know, nobody comes to a fight with $1,000 in their pocket.
So now, over the last several days, you've done a number of interviews. Of course, you know, DJ's birthday was earlier in the week. You know,
yeah.
I'm wondering if... I mean, how are you managing all of this? That wasn't my question, but I think I need to ask that question.
How am I managing it? Mm-hmm. I feel like justice hasn't been served. My family feels like justice hasn't been served. We're still fighting for justice. We still have a chance for justice because they never filed homicide charges. Talking about it was discussing with another person the other day, it kind of gives me therapy to talk about it because it's still eating away at me, because what happened to my son shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's I'm fighting for justice.
So now my original question was, a lot has been made of the laws and what the law does and does not do. I think as an activist and organizer, my question is not about the laws. I think that we understand that from sovereign immunity to I feared for my life to stand your ground, that over and over again we see situations where a white person or a law enforcement officer is able to say, even up to the Supreme Court, said yes, if an officer fears for his life, he can use whatever force he deems necessary, including deadly force. And so... when we look at the context of our history, and I think I've said this over and over again, you know, as I have talked to people about this over the years and recently, that it is not the laws, it is the adjudication of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And for whom and how that adjudication happens is dependent upon a lot of factors that have nothing to do with justice. How do you feel about that?
That directed to me?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I think you're exactly right. Number one, the stand your ground law. Florida was the first state to pass the stand your ground law when we already had Castle Doctrine. Stand your ground law tells you, hey, you don't have to back down. You can use deadly force. But it doesn't address the use of proportionality with the amount of danger you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a few months before my son's death in June of 2017, Governor Scott amended the law to put the burden of proof on the state rather than the person that did the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about accountability, you know, so this guy doesn't have to say anything. So the law, It's not it's not designed for persons of color. It's designed for the white homeowner.
Well,
that's what these gun laws are designed for.
The other day, I heard Dr. Carolyn Light, who is a Harvard attorney and a historian, and she's also written a book that I'm going to give you that title here in just a second. And she's worked extensively with you, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Dr. Carolyn Light of Harvard. And a question was asked of her in an interview if any black man, black person, had successfully, and we can cite the case of Marissa Alexander if you're familiar with that. We'll come right back to that. But that had any black person successfully used Stand Your Ground as a successfully used Stand Your Ground as a defense? And she said no.
Yeah, correct.
Right, and so that helps
over any case.
Provide some context for where we are here. So we have the history of McClenny. You have a retired, the son of a retired Baker County sheriff. Now, I read that Frazier Sr., the older Frazier, was a police officer in Duval County, which is Jacksonville, for the audience, before, and he was terminated in Jacksonville?
Yeah, because he shot somebody else.
Well, before that, he crippled someone in Baker County.
Okay.
Like I said, we've done rallies there. We've talked to people there. You know, we're not the only one to suffer in the hands of Baker County. Like I said, this is the bastion of the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still got remnants. You can go there. We go into court, and we hope to get justice, but they got a Ku Klux Klan depiction in a courthouse.
Yeah, I heard you say that yesterday. That was like a wow.
Yeah, we got to walk through that every day.
So tell us more about that. What does that look like? Is it a mural? Is it a picture?
It's a mural. It's got some cardinals up there. It's got three Klansmen riding on horse. It's got a few different, a mirage of different things, maybe a tree, but they kind of all relate kind of to the Confederacy.
Wow.
And so here we are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to move Confederate statues, and we've got murals depicting Klansmen inside the, of all places, courthouse.
I don't want to take away from this, but I do have something to say about where the one in Tampa was moved. This particular case, until you brought it to my attention, I had not heard about it.
Mm.
And I don't know if at the time when this happened, if there was, do you remember, Dominic, if there was any organized action or response? Was that happening?
Yeah, we had marches and we had marches and rallies, but like I said, we had to wait a long time for the evidence. They switched state attorneys,
and I'm sure that was strategic.
Yeah, that was strategic because he was from Baker County, and,
yeah,
you know, so he used the guys that, you know, we wouldn't be satisfied with whatever decision he came up with, but yet he wasn't really involved in doing any investigation. Mm-hmm. Melissa Nelson's office was more engaged, and they were promising us things like, we're going to take it to a grand jury. You know, we're not going to make a deal with him unless he talks. And then in the end, they were citing me case. And this, like, I think this is back to an earlier question you asked. Yes, they do use law depending upon who's at stake. They have different case law. You know, if you look at Morales versus the state, that case law shows you don't have to believe what the defendant tells you. We know the defendant lied. But they use different laws that they said were insufficient to prove that he wasn't, they couldn't prove that he wasn't standing his ground because it was on his property.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the color of your skin, on which law they're going to tell you they're going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
But the state attorney decided they were going to be, and in Florida, you can't, it's a grand jury that brings up homicide charges. I think it's murder one and murder two, and maybe. But they decided they were going to be the grand jury and decided not to even take the case to the grand jury or the judge when we begged them to. We told them we didn't want this plea deal we would take our chances, and they were trying to convince us. This is Melissa Nelson's office trying to convince us to take the plea deal. And I was like, well, you the one that told us from the beginning we shouldn't take a plea deal if he doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. That was before the favors were called in.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if that was an election year.
Well, Dr. Well, Carolyn...
I have a silver lining for you. His nursing license has been revoked, so he'll never be able to practice nursing again. Or if he does, he's going to have to work really hard and spend a lot of money to get it back.
Mm-hmm. Everything but justice.
Everything but justice.
Right.
Everything but justice. You know, that's why he wanted a plea deal, so he wanted to keep his nursing license. So he, you know... What the hell? We don't want you to have your nursing license. Why? You worked in a state hospital and beat up a black guy. His dad, like you were talking about, his dad, yeah, before he went back to Baker County to retire, he had shot a black man in the back in Jacksonville. So they fired him here. So he went from Baker County to Jacksonville, back to Baker County to retire.
That's what I wanted to get at.
His brother-in-law is the sheriff.
So he came to Baker. He was only a Baker County sheriff's deputy for several years, and then he was able to retire, correct?
Correct. That was the second time.
Mm-hmm, the second time. And so I wanted to circle back for Dr. Carolyn Light, because she has worked extensively with DJ's family. She is a professor at Harvard. She could not be here this morning because she teaches class at that time. I would like to have her in. She has written a book. She's the director of undergraduate studies in Harvard's program in the studies of women, gender, and sexuality. I'm sure she would have a lot of information for us. As she has a doctorate in history with a particular focus on gender, race, and sexuality in the U.S., and she has written a book called, and you want to check this out, Race, Guns, and the Politics of Self-Defense. So, yeah. So you've read about Marissa Alexander, also in Jacksonville, Florida, where Dominic Sr. lives. And there is something else. Oh, there's a video on YouTube. If you Google Dr. Carolyn Light, Carolyne, Light, Light, if you Google her, you will come up with a video that's about an hour long on the book that will walk you through it if you're not inclined to read it. And she will talk about some of the cases that she's weighed in on over the years.
Donna, mm-hmm. I think she's got a new book out, too, called Your Ground or something.
I think that one is Whose Castle?
Whose Castle?
Let me see, because I saw that book yesterday. She showed the cover. Whose Castle? The Weaponization of Self-Defense. And then there's another one. That's the latest book. I'm going to find it here just a second.
We also have, Mr. Dominic, if you are comfortable, we have two questions that came in via email.
Sure.
I can read them to you. This is from David, and he said, thank you for this important topic today, and many condolences and prayers to the victim's father and family. One, could you describe how far Baker County is from Jacksonville, which is the closest big city? I think a lot of folks listening don't know where it's located, and folks might not know that rural Florida is a lot different than the big cities.
Yeah, Baker County, McClenny, it's on. Jacksonville is at the east end of the United States. If you go 10 west, about 40 miles, 30, 40 miles, you'll reach Baker County.
So Jacksonville is about 40 miles from that?
Yes.
Okay. And then the second question was, has any major newspaper such as the Tampa Bay Times or Miami Herald done an investigation on this incident? I think it would be a great way to shine a light on this injustice. I can't answer this confidently. I don't think I've ever seen.
There was some coverage in the local papers and local television when it first happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so long before the trial and COVID, and it was in another county, so it didn't get a lot of coverage as far as national coverage.
Okay.
I did see some coverage.
I know I've seen an article in The Root about it. Harriet.
Yeah, Michael Harriet. And we've done some advertising since the beginning on Facebook. It's called Hashtag Justice, the number 4, DJ Broadus.
Mm-hmm.
That's Broadus. And we do have a GoFundMe account under the same name, Hashtag Justice, the number four, DJ Broadus. Our family motto is all eyes on Baker County for the civil trial. You know, we hold out hope, but as you mentioned, yeah, the rural area is a lot different than a big city.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are a lot of blacks and browns there that are scared of retaliation because we had a couple of meetings with churches and rallies. People turned out. But sometimes people were scared to talk, or they tell you in confidence of some of the issues they've uh-huh. been through in Baker County. So we're trying to do a tour to kind of show people, since they don't know a lot of difference from a big city, you know, how these little cities are. We set it up through Bob Schluber to try to have what we call an all eyes on Baker County tour right before the beginning of the civil trial. But again, you know, we're going into a civil trial where you got a pictorial of the KKK in the hallway of the courthouse. So we'll see what happens.
Uh-huh. So you guys,
and what courthouse is this going to be in?
In McClinney Courthouse. It's on Highway 90 in McClinney.
So McClinney Courthouse, did you say it was next month?
I'm sorry?
Did you say the civil trial was taking place next month? Sorry, I just want to reiterate the time.
It begins May 1st.
May 1st, okay.
And it should last approximately 2 weeks, but I don't think it'll probably last about 10 days.
Thank you.
So I'm looking at the GoFundMe. I think you talked a little bit about this in your interview yesterday morning with Vera Baker. And it says here that you guys have raised $575 of your $15,000 goal. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Jordan Davis case here.
I am.
There was a young man that was like 17 in 2012. He got shot by a guy from Miami because he was playing his music too loud in the gas station.
Mm-hmm.
His father... I've met him a few times, and one of the main things he told me was that, you know, you can't pick your attorney when it comes to a murder trial. You know, the state or the federal government has to file murder charges. It can't be an individual attorney. I took that to heart, and when we were looking for a civil lawyer, we looked for one with some prosecution experience because... I didn't trust the medical. I don't trust the law or the I'm skeptical of law enforcement and the judicial system. So this lawyer has a prosecution experience, but he's telling me we don't have video, so we have to use forensic evidence and forensic and blood splatter experts and medical experts. And those cost money, so we're trying to raise the money to get those people to come to court, and they have to travel to McClinney, so we have to pay. That's why we're trying to raise the money for the civil trial.
So if we had people out there that wanted to reach you, provide support or assistance, I'm going to give you the GoFundMe. The GoFundMe is Justice for the number 4, DJ Bob Broadus, which is spelled Broadus. So, you know, when you search on GoFundMe, you'd put in Justice for DJ Broadus. We'll also put that on the Surly Femmes website so that you can link to that. The other thing is, if people are trying to reach you, maybe someone knows a legal expert and they're listening, how do they get in contact with your people to offer that support?
You can contact us off the same Justice for DJ Broadus off of Facebook, or if you need to, they can write to me personally at dominic.broadus@gmail.com.
I like that. Say that one more time.
Dominic, DOMINIC .broadus@gmail.com.
So tell me, what do you want the public to know? I don't think that we've done a very good job of asking you questions because you've done such a good job of laying it out for us. What do you want the public to know?
I think me and my family want the public to have all eyes on Baker County, to watch this process, to make sure, to see that these laws that they're passing are not just for people of color, and to help us push for further homicide charges, and if we need to press the state to do that.
What about the federal government?
We've looked at the federal government. I've written to the federal government, and, you know, you get the same standard response. You know, we'll watch it, but, you know, it seems like the state is doing what they're supposed to do. You know, contact us if you need any more information, blah, blah, blah.
So have you spoken to your congressional representatives? Because that's really the only way to penetrate that wall that they have.
No, not lately. I haven't had.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that we'll talk about that offline. But I told you before that I have some ideas about that, because that's really going to be, you would have to speak to someone at the a legislator. And I've worked on cases in the past, you know, doing advocacy, where we didn't even talk to the person in our district. We talked to the person in our district. They didn't do anything. And we went to Orlando and we talked to somebody down there. They wrote the letter, which prompted the congressperson in our district to follow up with the letter, which got the case assigned to an actual attorney inside the DOJ.
Right. And that's embarrassing. You have one job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote to the middle district. I've written to, I can show you some of the letters I've written.
Oh, I'm sure about that. Middle district, the federal. We have
another comment via email. Bubba said, I didn't realize that Baker County only has 28,000 people. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Perry, Florida, another North Florida rural town with a racist history.
We got Lake County, too. Devil in the Grove.
He's asking if there's any possibility that DJ's family is related to Calvin Broadus. I don't know Calvin.
Snoop Dogg.
Oh, they use his government name.
When I was younger, I used to tell the girls that, yes.
Ah, there's your pickup line. I see you. And do you believe that your son would have gotten justice had he been in Jacksonville as opposed to this small little racist outpost?
You know, like I told you, we don't have video. Justice for, you know, this thing in Memphis, it's... they talk about it being a standard. We'll see if it's the standard the next time someone gets killed. You know, you still got the law enforcement. They did good, but this guy hasn't passed through. Those policemen hadn't been through the judicial system yet. And so, and they already talking about getting rid of the sheriff because she turned him in. You know?
Dominic, how do you, this is a corny question. I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you keep going? What gives you the strength, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, to keep going?
My belief in God, number one. Mm-hmm. People that believe in what I'm doing, you know, the people that have worked with me, the advocacy groups like you guys, Color Change, Black Lives Matter, Jacksonville Community Action Committee,
Bob
Schluberg, Dr. Light, my family. Those are the things, not seeing justice done, to continually see this in my lifetime. And I was born in 1960, when we see that we've come away, but we're still treated as different. As different citizens, as a different class of citizens. That's what keeps me going. You know, this shouldn't be the way it is. You know, not after what our parents and our ancestors have been through. We shouldn't have to go through this. My grandson is half white. So this isn't, you know, but he's six foot. Mm. He's 200 pounds. He plays tackle on football.
Caden's a big boy. He's a big boy.
Yeah. He should be judged by the content of his character, not by the color of his skin. You know, that's what I'm fighting for. That's what I'm fighting for. That's what keeps me going.
Do you think we'll get change? Do you think he'll get justice?
My son?
All of us. Your son, you, Caden? DJ?
We're going to keep fighting until we do. Keep fighting. Until there's no fight left. Yeah.
What do you need from the community right now besides support with the GoFundMe so that you can get your expert testimony taken care of? What else do you need from the community?
I'd like for y'all to support us in the tour, support us in, you know, like I said, these laws. You know, this, you know, my son is my main focus, but this affects a lot of black people.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look at these laws, and when they're racist, we need to call it out, and we need to call these people out of office. We need to repeal, especially the part where the standing ground law, where it says, "Hey, the burden of proof is on the prosecutor and not on the person that did the killing." And we talk about accountability, but yet we take away all accountability. That, you know, we need, you know, it's not just me. It's our country, our race that needs this.
Tell us one more time before, and we thank you so much for coming and telling your story and pouring out your heart. And you said that it was therapeutic for you, and so we're glad that we could be a part of that. Tell us one more time the Facebook page where people can go to follow the case and support you.
Okay, the Facebook page is hashtag justice, the number 4, DJ Broadus, B-R-O-A-D, broad, then us.
Okay.
And it's the same as the GoFundMe account. So they're both under the same name.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. We'll keep checking in until you said May 11th.
May the 1st.
May 1st.
12th.
I added a 1.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Appreciate you letting me express, talk about my son.
Absolutely. Your son was a member of our community. Right. And until all of us are free, until all of us have justice, none of us have justice. Right. We'd like to have you back on before and possibly during the civil trial, if it's not too much. I will talk to Bob about that and we'll get you set up so we can have you back in the studio. And I don't know if you know it or not, but we broadcast into Pasco County, Hillsborough, Pinellas, Polk.
Online everywhere.
So, you know, we can get this link to Michael Sampson at the Jacksonville Community Action Committee. Let everybody know that you're going to be on so people can get an update from us, mm-hmm. From you, directly from you during the trial and before the trial, okay?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your listeners, too. Thank you, guys.
We do as well. Our little parallelogram of enemies.
Yeah.
man, that was a lot. And he's handling it better than I would, I feel like. I actually don't know how I would handle that. It's such a situation. And the fact that he says that he's only focused on his son but understands the bigger picture and what's going on. I really commend him for doing that.
And the family just said that Monica Petrella made a donation to the campaign. So thank you for that, for being great supporters of both the Surly Voices and also of the causes that we rep.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about Confederate monuments earlier and what happened in Tampa. And I have to say this because he was talking about how there was one in the courthouse and... something that stood with me, a statement someone made once, was that laws are just an expression of our politics, and our politics are insane right now. But there was one of Robert E. Lee down at the courthouse in Tampa, and we protested that to get it removed. And guess what happened to it? People don't know what happened to it.
I know where it is.
Where is it?
It's off a busy state road in a private cemetery.
Do you know whose private cemetery?
I don't want to know, but tell me.
Stacey White's, like a county commissioner offered to take it. Do you remember Stacey White?
Okay, so can I say this?
So it's in his family's cemetery.
I never thought that, okay, so listen, you guys, we were trying to get a civilian review board with teeth. We were trying to get rid of our corrupt sheriff, right? We were trying to hold our local law enforcement accountable. We were marching in the street to show that we had many people that support Black lives. And then someone came along and said, "Ooh, look, a statue." I didn't even know where the statue was. Number two, statues don't cause racism. Number three, it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to move that statue to what good end? And I'm going to give you a 1 minute update, rundown of Confederate statues. Confederate statues were popular, became popular during the post-Reconstruction era from about 1890 to 1915. This was the rise of the Knight Riders, also known as the Ku Klux Klan, the codification of Jim Crow laws, which gave us segregation, which changed the course of our nation. Now, if you'll allow me.
No, they act like it was always there.
Indulge me.
Go ahead.
These,
don't forget about the daughters of
the American Revolution.
All right, you got 3 minutes. Go.
Now, these statues did not go up immediately following or at the end of the Civil War as a consolation prize. These statues, hundreds of them around the country, became popular during the rise of Jim Crow, which codified racism and legalized racism in our country. Why? It was a symbol of that the South will never die, that Dixie never went down, and that segregation today, tomorrow, segregation forever, said Bull Connor, correct? Now,
yes.
We know all of that. Most of you know all of that, but I had to say that. The statues were a show of strength. They did not cause racism. They were an outgrowth of racism. They were a part of the code. They said it's like putting a flag. Right? Europeans are very fond of putting flags on the moon, on the North Pole.
Catching strays this morning. Leave me alone.
No, I got to do this.
I identify as a lot.
I got to do this, right? And if you guys really want to see, I did a long article on this with Sarasota Times, came out yesterday. You can go and read about this some more. But I want to tell you that these statues were, in my mind, as an activist and an organizer, we're looking at sovereign immunity that gives these officers the right to do the things that they do. The Stand Your Ground laws that allow DJ Broadus not to get justice, those statues did not impede that process. Literally, the hanging tree still standing in Lake County, the Klansmen are writing on the walls of the McLennan County Courthouse, and not a single Black man less than when we started this Trayvon Martin 2012.
In fact, there's more.
There's actually more. We are not winning, and the statues did not help us. And Sarasota, the reason why that article was written is because they want to put back the statue. They finally got so much public outcry, they said, okay, we're not going to do this. They scrapped it. But think about that. The activists came, and they made up all this noise, take down the statue. The statue was moved, and they didn't put anything there. Not effective.
Well, on that note,
unpopular opinion.
You're just tuning in. We're shortly wrapping up, but this is WMNF Tampa.
I had to do it.
88.5. You're listening to the Surly Voices. If we had a really great episode today, so if you'd like to listen to it and you're interested, we talked about the DJ Broadus case, a man killed in Baker County.
Yeah, we're not done with that.
We're not done with that, so we'll keep updating our listeners, and hopefully you can join us in the coming weeks to hear more about that. Any parting words from Liz and Donna?
We're also not done following the municipal election.
Oh, no. Not,
not at all. Not at all. Oh,
next week we'll talk about following the money and Nepo Moms and Hamburglar.
Nepo Moms.
Yeah, we're going to go wild.
Liz has an axe to grind. Okay.
And a hashtag to go with the axe.
And on that note, I have to, again, remind everyone, your voter vote by mail applications have expired for everybody in Hillsborough County. So please go online, take 2 minutes, and get signed up back for that.
You're listening to WMNF 88.5.
I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing. I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks. I like going to the jeweler, I put rocks all in my watch. I like texts from my exes when they want a second chance. I like